Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson in the house on this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, Joe, what's going on?
Nothing. I never really have much good to say at the beginning of the shows. I was thinking about that as I was driving in today. Like, I never have, like, a good opening line. But it's Friday, so is that exciting? Is Friday exciting now?
Oh, Friday's exciting now.
Is it?
Friday will always be exciting.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm starting to, like, think it's all just blank day every day, you know?
Oh, I know. Munson, do you still get excited about Friday?
Yeah, because that means I got Saturday and Sunday to just relax and chill and watch TV.
Do not wake up at, what, 3:50 a.m.? I didn't realize you woke up at 3:50 a.m.
Yeah, early, I got to get here before everybody. I'm the first one in the morning staff that comes and, you know, get some work done. So, yeah.
That's a humble brag right there by Munson.
Yeah, I set him up for it.
I'm took him saying. 1 minute into the show.
I'm just saying, man, I'm early. I'm here early. I'm here before everybody, so, you know, except the overnight person. But, yeah, I'm here.
Munson's always kind of a glass half full kind of guy. Haven't you noticed that, Joe? He's just always, his outlook on life is always really good.
Yeah, unless you question his fantasy NBA team.
Well, that's true.
I'm always in a good mood.
You're going to fix that today, right?
Well,
yeah. We'll see.
Well, we'll see. I've come up with other ideas for this draft, so we'll discuss later.
Okay. All right.
Joe, I cut my grass yesterday, and I tweeted this out. I don't know if I've ever been so excited to cut my grass in my entire life. Like, I purposely put the push mower out there and, like, just did it on foot to make it take longer. And it took, like, 2.5 hours. It was awesome. I loved it.
Nice. Yeah, we had the same thing going at my house. Of course, at my house, it was my 15-year-old cut the lawn. I was very excited to watch him move around and go do that. But maybe I should have done. Maybe I should have taken that off his hands, all right? Because it does sound kind of, I mean, it's nice to be outside. It's just that, you know, if you have a 15-year-old, that's who should cut the lawn, right?
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, there's no question about that. I even came face-to-face with a snake yesterday. It was awesome. I won that battle, so that was good.
What do you mean that you won that battle?
I mean, I didn't die. So that's basically the main thing.
Okay. What kind of snake?
You know, I usually don't hang around long enough to find out, but I'm about 90% sure it was a garter snake, so it really wasn't that big a deal.
Okay.
But, I just snakes aren't my thing. I can't do it.
Oh, man, it's number one on my list of...
You live in the wrong area to be worried about that, my guy.
I know. I think I would rather wrestle a bear than have to touch a snake. Like, I think I'd rather fist fight a bear.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if I had to list, you know, fear, you know, animals that you're afraid of, yeah, it's snakes got to be number one easily.
Do we know anybody that gators. Just, like, loves snakes? They're like, oh, yeah, I love them. Don't mind snakes at all.
Carol Baskins.
Well,
I don't know. I just took a guess.
That could be a good point. Could be a good point.
Is that true? I don't know. I still haven't watched Tiger King.
Well, no, I don't know for sure. She just loves that.
She just loves cats.
Well, she loves cool cats and kittens. It's a difference, Jeff.
Okay.
Got to make sure you get the difference in there, yes. So, Joe, some big news yesterday. Derrick Henry has signed his $10.2 million franchise tender, which is very good news, I think, for Titans fans that are hoping for Derrick Henry to get a longer-term deal done. Still some work to do there, but it seems like the relationship between Derrick Henry and the Titans is still pretty good based on the news coming out yesterday. And I think we all, you know, after John Robinson made his comments a couple days ago, we all kind of knew and hoped that their relationship was moving in a good direction. I think yesterday solidified that to me even more.
Yeah, no question. The fact that he signed it now, you know, so basically this wipes away the idea of like a holdout situation as we've seen in other, tag and non-tag situations, but certainly in some tag situations. I think it's definitely a sign. I mean, you know, it certainly doesn't guarantee that they're going to come to an agreement long term, But it goes along with the idea that both sides are serious about doing it. I mean, obviously, Derrick Henry's side should be very serious about doing it. But, yeah, I think him doing this tells you that he thinks they're serious about doing it. And so that, I think that lends optimism to the idea that they will get it done.
Ryan Clark of ESPN had some comments on the Titans working to get a deal done with Derrick Henry and how Derrick Henry is showing that he wants to be a part of this team moving forward. Here's what Ryan Clark had to say.
They signed Ryan Tannehill early and show faith in him even before Tom Brady hits the market. And Derrick Henry was the bell cow of this team. In the second half of this season, he was absolutely amazing. And they understand they need him to be a part of the team, but they also know they have to get him for a deal that makes sense for the Tennessee Titans. And I think Derrick Henry showed great faith in signing the franchise tender already. He's showing he wants to be a part of this team. But when you look at what Melvin Gordon got now on the market in Denver as compared to what he was asking for or what was reported he was offered by the Chargers, I think Derrick Henry is smart to stay somewhere where he's wanted, somewhere he's had success, and work on getting a deal done there. And for this team, it shows that if you play well for the Titans, they'll do their best to take care of you.
Yeah, an interesting point there from Ryan Clark, because you look at other situations around the league. The Melvin Gordon situation that we all know that happened last year that Ryan Clark was talking about there. This is a good look, I think, from both Derrick Henry and the Titans of negotiating in good faith. I know there's the initial reaction once the Titans made the decision to place the franchise tag on Derrick Henry just because of the uncertainty that you have moving forward. But it looks like both sides are kind of negotiating in good faith with each other, which gives me a lot of confidence, Joe, that you know, at some point down the line here, I'm very confident that a long-term deal is going to get worked out.
Yeah, I very confident. I don't know if I'd go very confident, but I would definitely say confident. You know, I mean, I still think there's a pretty decent gap in terms of, you know, what the money, you know, one side wants to pay and the money one side hopes to get. And you know, there are challenges with this team in terms of, you know, we'll see what else happens in free agency. Hey, maybe they don't really sign anybody else, and they let Logan Ryan go, and then there'd be obviously more space that way. But yeah, at this point, I would lean toward a deal will get done, and it may not be exactly what Derrick Henry envisioned, you know, a couple months ago. But, I mean, look, I mean, Melvin Gordon signs a two-year deal. Derrick Henry's better than Melvin Gordon. And Melvin Gordon is still one of the top, you know, what, 6 to 8 backs in the league. Signed a two-year deal for, you know, $16 million with the Broncos, for example. I mean, it's just, you know, if you're $10 million to me, I don't think it's enough for what Derrick Henry does for this team. I also don't think $15 million is happening. So I think it'll be obviously somewhere in between those two numbers. And then where in between? How much is guaranteed? How is it structured? I don't think there's any question it'll be structured so that 2 years from now, if it's not working out for whatever reason, the Titans can get out of it.
Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN talked about the decision to sign the franchise tag tender. Here's what Tim Hasselbeck had to say.
Yeah, I think this makes sense completely. One, the franchise, you know, tender, it makes sense right now for the team, especially as they were trying to sign Ryan Tannehill. Pays him a little over $10 million this year. And if you just look at the running back market and some of the deals that have been signed that either didn't work, like Todd Gurley's deal, or a situation like the Jets are having with Le'Veon Bell, where maybe they don't love the deal that they have him signed to, you have to look and just wonder, okay, what is the market for a guy that, quite honestly, is a two-down back, not really a three-down back? And so $10 million is a lot of money this year, but if you can work something out that stays under some of those benchmarks set by those other running backs, then maybe it's something that the Tennessee Titans can digest long-term.
So you heard Tim Hasselbeck's comments there, Joe, and mentioned what we've talked about several times here on the show. I think the two-down back part of this, that's something that's going to be interesting to watch in terms of how it affects the negotiations. Maybe the price tag does come in under some of these other running backs who have proven to be three down running backs in the league. But again, if I'm Derrick Henry and in my camp kind of negotiating with this, my argument would be, why don't you put me in on third down and see what I can do at that point? So interesting to see how that part of this discussion that we've talked about a lot continues to impact negotiations as they move forward.
Yeah, well, he's been in on third down some, and you know, I think from what I've seen, you know, they do need a third down back to complement him, and you know, you don't need that with Ezekiel Elliott or Christian McCaffrey, Le'Veon Bell, you know. So I mean, at this point, from what we've seen, they've got to invest more in his backup than some teams have to invest in their backup to their primary running back. And that to me is the one thing that should bring the price down. It's the same story with all, you know, this back did this back did that. So Derrick Henry gets less. You know, I don't buy it, I reject it. I do buy that running back is a short-term position in the NFL, but he's 26. And again, tag, you know, that's what some people are saying, just tag him twice.
Right.
And then if he's really good in 2 years, and it's very possible that at 28, Derrick Henry will still be really good, and you're not going to get him the next year. You know, I mean, and now, is that as big a risk as the risk of paying a truckload and then seeing a running back fade? No, but I mean, you have to look again at this situation. How is this guy fading or banged up at all right now? Right at this moment, he's not. So, but the two down back thing, I mean, look, it is fair. I mean, they're going to have to probably spend a draft pick on somebody, and they've got other needs. And so that alone is something that other teams with backs that they feel great in every situation don't have to do.
Yeah, no question about that. So, you know, whether it's the draft, and we've got Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason coming on at 9 o'clock on the show. I would like to get his thoughts on what kind of an NFL future he thinks Keyshawn Vaughn would have, because Joe, you've thrown that name out a couple times. That he's an intriguing player to me that maybe the Titans could have some potential interest in, you know, later in the third round, fourth round, somewhere in that area.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, if they could, John Glennon, my cohort at The Athletic, his most recent mock draft had Keyshawn Vaughn going to the fifth round of the Titans. And I'm like, man, if they could get him in the fifth round, that would be a tremendous value to me. I'm high on Keyshawn Vaughn. I really think he's going to do some good things in this league.
When we come back, what sort of an impact do we think that Vic Beasley will have on this defense? And is Jeffrey Simmons ready to kind of take that next step with the absence of Jarrell Casey? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans general manager John Robinson talking about bringing in Vic Beasley as a free agent signing this offseason to help with the pass rush. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, kind of the main thing that stood out was one of the first things that John Robinson said there was that Vic Beasley plays really hard. And, you know, we've heard some of the work ethic concerns that have come out of, you know, the reports out of Atlanta about how, you know, sometimes it just looks like he's dogging it out there and the work ethic maybe is not where they need it to be. It did kind of strike me that one of the first things that John Robinson said was about how Vic Beasley works hard.
Yeah, it's almost like he made a point to say that first. And, you know, there's two different things on when you talk about work ethic, Robbie. One is, I mean, anybody can watch these games and you can sit there and, I mean, look, there are times when you can see a player is dogging it. And there's other times when maybe a player gets blocked and, you know, some people are like, oh, he didn't try hard. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a difference between kind of casually watching a game and having a perception of what a guy did out there, and then like the coach going through snap by snap, because they go snap by snap with these guys. And you know, I think most coaches in this league aren't big on, you know, lacking effort. Now, work ethic outside of, you know, the games,
yeah,
you know, that's a different thing. And that's one of those things where you assume that, you know, the Titans did their homework to get a feel for, you know, Vic Beasley's daily approach to his job. But I think this definitely, to me, Robbie, is a case of Mike Vrabel, you know, feeling really good about working with guys in particular at this, like John Robinson said, well, he's like 12, 13, 14, 15, whatever. It's a lot of years.
Yeah.
At the, you know, as linebacker in the NFL. And he loves, you know, he loves doing that. He works with a lot of different players out there, well documented, but especially, you know, guys at linebacker. That's his thing. Defensive line too. He gets in there, but I think this may not be the last situation where, you know, there's a guy who has talent, who comes at a reasonable price, who maybe has some knocks on him that they think, you know what, we can take that guy and we can get the most out of him. And if they can, well, this is going to look like a really nice signing.
Yeah, and look, it's obvious that the talent is there. We've seen it in Atlanta. We've seen some flashes of it even over the last couple years when he struggled as far as sack totals are concerned compared to his breakout year a couple years ago in 2016. Mike Vrabel does seem like kind of the perfect guy that if there's another level for Vic Beasley to get to in terms of consistency, that Vrabel's the guy that can get him back there and can get him back to the guy that led the league in sacks. And Mike Vrabel was asked about that in terms of his development and his role and getting that out of Vic Beasley. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I mean, that's our job, is to have a vision for the player and coach him and hold him to a standard that's expected of our players. You know, I'm not going to comment on what was done or what wasn't done in Atlanta. We're focused on moving forward, you know, with Vic, with a skill set that we like, with a player that can run and has some speed, some explosiveness, some versatility, we believe. You know, and then that's what I'll do. That's what Shane will do. That's what Matt Edwards will do. And you know, there'll be a lot of people involved in helping him still continue to develop and try to find a role for us and ultimately help us win.
So, Joe, we've spent a lot of time here on the show talking about Jadeveon Clowney and maybe his potential interest in the Titans, what his fit would be with the Titans. But if Clowney doesn't happen, but you can still get Vic Beasley that he was in 2016 when he had 15 and a half sacks, all of a sudden, if he's anywhere close to that, that really transforms your pass rush from a defensive aspect. So that's what Mike Vrabel and the Titans are hoping happens. Look, still up in the air what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney, whether it's with the Titans or the Seahawks or somebody else around the league. But if you're John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and the Titans and Vic Beasley approaches looking like the Vic Beasley he was in 2016, it's a major win for you in free agency.
Oh, yeah, and you're right. And also with Clowney, I mean, John Clayton did, and of course John Clayton, for people who don't know, he's based in Seattle, so he's really plugged into the Seahawks. I mean, he just reported that Clowney's price is coming down, maybe in the 17 million range. I still think 17 million is a little too rich for the Titans' blood, but maybe it can keep coming down. And so then you've really changed a lot and added a lot in addition to losing Jarrell Casey, you know, in that front seven. But yeah, I mean, Vic Beasley, I think no matter what, you know, he's going to be relied on to a pretty large extent this year. So you've been trying to find, you know, enough help for Harold Landry to kind of get him going, and some of getting him going is him getting going. And, you know, they signed Kamalei Correa as well, and he really finished strong last year. I mean, he showed some good stuff, made some big plays in the playoffs. It's kind of a right now – just sort of a pass rush by committee and see who emerges. But no matter what, Vic Beasley is definitely, you know, $9.5 million. I mean, that's an investment. You've got to get some return on that.
And you know, Vrabel was asked about, you know, the outside pass rush that they have right now as currently constructed on the roster. And Joe, you mentioned the kind of the pass rush by committee. Here's what Mike Vrabel had to say about their outside pass rush.
Well, we have some guys that have played and made plays in this league. I think there's some versatility. I think we have some young guys that we wanted to work with and did work with, but we'll have an opportunity to continue to work with, whether that's, you know, Reggie Gilbert hasn't played a whole lot of plays for us, but certainly has showed, excuse me, flashes of things that we like. You know, Roberson showed flashes, and then obviously trying to get DeAndre Walker back healthy. Those are three younger bodies, you know, two guys going in their second year, one guy, you know, going into his fourth year, but then other guys that have played, you know, a lot of football for us. You know, Harold's played a lot of football, and Kamale's played a lot of football for us. You know, and we'll have to get Vic brought up to speed on as soon as we can. And as always with any player, as much as they can handle, that's what we'll give them. If they can handle that and they prove to be proficient in the things that we've asked them to do, then we'll look to give them some more. You know, and then Josh Smith, a guy that we signed back, a local guy that in his short time with us showed that he had some of the skills needed to play the position, and that we wanted to continue to work with him.
So, Joe, you mentioned kind of the pass rush by committee there. I think Vrabel listed off about seven names there in terms of people he's excited to work with here. So really going to be interesting to see if this is it, and this is, you know, kind of what the picture looks like heading into the draft, what the outside pass rush is going to look like, even if they do bring in somebody in the draft and have a rookie to complement some of these guys.
Yeah, and that's what I suspect it'll be. And, you know, DeAndre Walker is another name. I mean, of course, for people who don't remember, drafted out of Georgia last year, missed all year with an injury. But they had some optimism that, you know, he really has some ability to, you know, to get after the passer too. So certainly you got some competition. I mean, I think Derek Roberson certainly flashed some ability at times. So, I mean, look, a lot of this is – it's in the NFL, it's like you think about, you know, what a guy is on draft day, and you don't really think about improvement in the NFL as much, but it does happen, and that's a big thing. And I think, you know, teams and coaching staffs that can get players to actually develop and improve, obviously, you know, that's a key to success. And I think they're very confident here in their teaching and coaching. Problem for them is there's no teaching and coaching right now, and who knows when there will be. And that's the same situation for everyone. But, you know, we're talking about the pass rush right now. There's an area where I think Mike Vrabel would love to have some hands-on time here in the spring with these guys as was scheduled, and he's not going to get it.
And, Joe, I think you and I both believe that regardless of what happens with the outside pass rush, Jeffrey Simmons' role is going to be important and is going to increase. Vrabel was asked about Simmons' role heading into next year. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I mean, I think that's obviously the transition that we hope. I mean, that would be the plan, is to be able to expand Jeffrey's role moving into his second year. You know, we are excited that he's feeling better, that he's doing well, and that he continues to work with Todd and Frank per the NFL guidelines as it relates to players that are rehabbing. And that's kind of where we see, you know, Jeffrey moving in that direction. So, you know, that's all going to play out once we get back here. But that's a position that he knows and rotated at and played some at. But, you know, I think you'd obviously like to have him on the field more than you'd like to have him off of it.
So, Joe, pretty obvious that I think John Robinson and Mike Vrabel both are very high on Jeffrey Simmons after what they saw last year. And hopefully, you know, with an offseason of him healthy and being able to train, that translates next year to a monster season for Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, and of course, he's actually training, you know, with Titans staffers too because of, you know, his situation. And, yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot on Jeffrey Simmons, and I think there's a lot of talent there, a lot of ability, and I could see him being a really good player in this league for a long time. But it's still a lot on him in his second year. And again, I just kind of I looked at this before the offseason, like, you know, this will be, you know, Jarrell Casey declining a bit, but still good, and then Simmons coming on, and that combo this year in particular might be special. And obviously, it's not going to happen. So now it's Simmons has to be the anchor up there. And, I think he has the talent, but he's got to get some help too.
When we come back, Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us like he does every Friday at 6:30. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, my man?
Hey, good morning, guys.
So, Josh, we got another week without sports. It's come and gone. I was telling the guys earlier, like, there was so much joy and pride I took yesterday in, like, cutting my grass. I think we're all kind of realizing some things that we took for granted through all this, and we're all missing sports pretty badly at this point, I think.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think watching old sports, watching the Rose Bowl last night with USC and Texas, and it really anything that comes up, I think – reminds us of what we wish would be going on right now, like the Final Four coming up this weekend would be a whole lot of fun. I think we'd be looking forward to the Masters coming up, and there's going to be some old Masters rounds that are going to air, but it's still not quite the same. I think the ratings that we've seen, the amount of viewers for the iRacing that NASCAR's done shows that people, you know, they will gravitate to anything that can be out there, and NASCAR's, I think, done a good job in getting that together. They put it together pretty quickly, and people have responded. Now you have Bristol coming up, so whatever we can find, we'll take it right now. But I'm expecting at least there will be a greater appreciation for sports and everything else when everything else does get back to normal, whenever that is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that, Josh. Recent ruling this week on the fact that spring athletes can all get another year of eligibility. Nothing for winter athletes. No big surprise there. But the spring athletes ruling, what's your reaction to that, and how do you think that affects Tennessee in particular?
The ruling was about what I expected, with winter sport athletes not getting the extra eligibility, spring sport athletes getting it, and then it being left up to the schools. And I thought ahead of time that it would be left up to the schools with the financial flexibility, because all the schools are in different positions. Trying to compare an SEC school or a Big Ten school to a school at a lower level within Division I, Wyoming. Wyoming's athletic director announces a pay cut that he's taking. Obviously, the financial situation for a school like Wyoming or Middle Tennessee compared to the University of Tennessee is going to be different. How it affects UT, I don't know, because I'm not sure that they know entirely. I think, one, they have to find out who exactly plans to come back versus moving on. So that is unknown right now. And the schools also don't know exactly what kind of financial situation they're going to be in over the next year or two, because right now they don't know exactly what the status is with football. And don't know answers aren't great, but there are a lot of them right now. And I think not committing to something that you don't know for sure you'll be able to back up is probably the right move right now, because I don't know that it's entirely necessary, but I think it's the right step to at least allow for the eligibility, and then you take the wait-and-see approach as you wait and see what kind of financial situation you're in. And I'll also be curious, do we see more administrators, athletic directors, coaches, do we see more pay cuts there, voluntary or involuntary, to help mitigate the financial hit that they're going to take? I would expect more of that is coming.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us. Josh, what have we learned about Jeremy Pruitt and his staff in terms of recruiting as we head into his third year now?
Well, recruiting for 2021 is still wait and see. There I go throwing that term out again. But it is, in this case, as they landed two commitments this week. I think Tennessee was really excited to get Walker Merrill, the wide receiver from Brentwood, and then a running back who's a really good athlete, incredible speed, in Jalen Wright. He's out of Durham, North Carolina. And Tennessee, I think, big picture, long-term, expects to recruit at a higher level than it has so far with Jeremy Pruitt. And this past year's class was a good class, the one that was just signed a few months ago. And Tennessee did a really good job to finish strong, especially considering how the 2019 season started. But if you look at some of the coaching moves, whether it was coaches that left Tennessee on their own or in some case, I think there was a middle part of maybe somebody wanting to move on and Tennessee being okay with that, I think some of the hires that were made were to take Tennessee's recruiting to an even higher level. And I'll still come back and say Tennessee needs to win at a higher level. You have the chicken or the egg argument that continues to kind of float out there in Tennessee football recruiting. But if Tennessee's able to compete at a higher level, I think Tennessee has a staff that should be able to recruit at a high enough level to be even more competitive. Now, to reach where Georgia is, where Alabama is, that's very much to be determined. But I think even internally, Jeremy Pruitt has said, we need to recruit at a better level. We need to get more high-level players, and that's what his focus is on with this class and the future for Tennessee.
And it just strikes me, Josh, that if there's anyone – who's going to, you know, spend every waking hour and figure out every way to, you know, to do whatever you can do at this, you know, odd time in human history. It's going to be Jeremy Pruitt. Although, speaking of that, you know, Nick Saban, his guys are what they're using Apple Watches. Yeah, I mean, which I wasn't totally clear on this. Apparently, they got a waiver or a clearance on that. But I guess this is just the latest example of if there's anyone who's going to find the loophole first, it's going to be Nick Saban.
Yeah, that's actually, it's been pretty confusing, hasn't it, over the last 18 to 24 hours, just with the reports and the quotes. And you know, part of that, I wonder, is just with everything that's going on, maybe that it hasn't been communicated very well, which would not surprise me, and I don't know that that's to anyone's fault, but it's left more confusion. There are going to be other confusing matters here. But for sure, Alabama, and I would think Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee and other coaches at other schools, they're going to do everything they can to try to communicate most effectively and have players prepared as best they can. But my takeaway yesterday afternoon was that there's probably been some holdup in the communication, and we don't know everything that they're allowed to do, and maybe some of the coaches don't know exactly all that they're allowed to do. I mean, remember what's it been, 3 weeks now, I guess, but with the NCAA tournament and the spring sport cancellation from the NCAA level, remember, you had the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, saying, I'd like to know more about what went into the decision to cancel those spring sport championships. So if there was some break in the communication lines there, I don't think we should be surprised to see it happen elsewhere. So you know, by this afternoon, I'm guessing that what I'm saying here will have been cleared up some way. But in the meantime, it leads to, well, that's Alabama. They get to play by different rules, and you know what the talk's going to be there.
Yep, exactly.
Josh, yesterday on Instagram, I think it was, Josh Dobbs put out this memory of him playing football at Tennessee, and it got me thinking about, like, what do you think Josh Dobbs' legacy is at the University of Tennessee? I think a lot of Tennessee fans were guilty of maybe taking what he did for granted, especially, you know, realizing what happened after and kind of the quarterback struggles they went through at a time last year. What do you think the legacy is for Josh Dobbs at Tennessee?
I think Josh Dobbs is one of those Tennessee football players who will be more appreciated as time goes on beyond his time at Tennessee. There was a lot of time while Josh was playing quarterback at Tennessee where fans complained and didn't think he was a good enough passer. And he wasn't perfect by any means, but he was a playmaker for Tennessee. And Tennessee's offense was really successful with him at quarterback. And he was a guy that represented Tennessee really well and just did everything that you would ask of a student athlete and you hope for a player to be. He was that off the field for sure, and on the field he was a really good player. And you're right, the quarterback play right after that was nowhere near the level of where it was overall in 2016 and the year before that as well with Dobbs there. But I think Josh is kind of in that Casey Clawson category of, you know, while Casey was at Tennessee, at first fans loved him, and that 2001 season they get to the SEC title game, fell short against LSU, but went into 2002 with high expectations, fell short there, and then people started to talk about what was next. And then with Eric Ainge, people started to talk about what was next with Jonathan Crompton, and that got off to a bad start, and Crompton finished okay. But I think it's been very easy for, if things don't reach the highest level of expectation, for fans to say, okay, well, then let's see what the next guy can do. And that happens all over the place, not just at Tennessee, but it for sure happens at quarterback, and I think it's happened with Josh Dobbs. And I think as more time passes, people will look back at what he was able to do and the offense success and the numbers they were able to put up on that side of the ball and think even more fondly of Josh Dobbs. And some will think back and say, you know what, at the time I should have thought that as well.
Yeah, and it's also easy, I think, to look back and say, man, imagine Butch Jones's tenure without Josh Dobbs, right? I mean, to me, yeah. You know, you look back at everything, and I think he maybe glossed over some of the things that were going that we eventually saw with the program. Speaking of which, what do you think about Butch Jones? What is Butch Jones's future in coaching, Josh?
I have no idea. I thought that he was going to have a good chance at that Colorado State job. At least appeared that that was going to be the case, and then he ended up not getting the job. And I don't know what Butch is going to do in the future. Is he a head coach at his next stop? Can he find a school that will take him on? I don't think that's at a Power 5 level, would not be my guess. I would think that it's you know, more level like where he's coached before, Central Michigan, Colorado State, maybe something like that? Or does he need to go be a full-time assistant and still continue to try to kind of is rehabilitate his image as a coach? Maybe that's the right description, maybe not. But at some point, I still think he bounces back because, you know, I don't know exactly what he would be able to do. I think he could actually be a fine hire if he has learned from the mistakes that he made at Tennessee, if he will have taken advantage of having worked with Nick Saban for a few years. I think there are some really good things that can come out of that. And again, he has to do things differently than he did at Tennessee. I also think being at Tennessee was probably too much over the long haul for Butch Jones, which is probably a pretty obvious statement. But I mean, in terms of the those expectations, the pressure, the 24/7 coverage that can be there, that as things got bumpier along the way, I don't think Butch handled that. Maybe he can have he will have learned some lessons from that, because before Tennessee, he had legitimate success, and I think he still could in the future. Doesn't mean the jokes from Tennessee fans aren't going to stop, but if he wants to be a head coach again, I would think that he still has plenty of time to be able to do that.
Josh, last thing for you real quick. You mentioned the USC and Texas game being on last night. A lot of people had a lot of fun watching that game over again. You know, Alabama and Georgia was a good one. Alabama and Clemson have had a few good national championship games as well. Is USC and Texas unquestionably the best national championship game you've ever seen?
I would not say unquestionably, but it's right up there with what you had in terms of star power, with everything USC had done to that point, with Vince Young bringing Texas back and the play that he makes there at the end, and just everything he did for that offense. I still think about Deshaun Watson, what he was able to do to beat Alabama. It's similar to me in that USC was the unstoppable, powerful force there, and Alabama was largely viewed that way as well and had won more championships than USC. So what Deshaun Watson did just a few years ago for Clemson, I think there are a number of great quarterback performances we can think of. But in terms of a national championship game, star power, the name brands, I mean, it's USC versus Texas, and it's Vince Young versus Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and all the other great players that were on those teams. I would say it's right up there. It's not going to take a back seat to anybody. And the drama that came with it, we always look forward to that. And right now, I think we're looking at where we are now in sports and where we were at the time. And that game is as perfect as any, I would say, to bring that up.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Josh, thanks as always for joining us. Hope you have a great weekend.
Hey, you got it. You too. Thanks, guys.
When we come back, what college do we think has produced the most NBA players, or not the most, the best NBA players? It's easy to figure out who's produced the most. Which college do we think has produced the best NBA players? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this, Nashville, like we do everything else together. Go to RockNashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, we've got an interesting question that we want to toss out there. Which college has produced the best NBA players? And Joe, I look at this and there's, you know, I think a few different ways you could go with this. I mean, obviously Kentucky comes to mind, and North Carolina, UCLA, Duke, a lot of these power programs in the world of college basketball. As you start to unpack this, Joe, and try to determine which college has produced the best NBA players, and remember, this could be a very subjective list as to who you consider the best to be. How do you go about starting to answer this question?
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I mean, ESPN came out this week with a position by position. Now, of course, their deal is, and it's called Position U. I guess this came out a couple days ago. You know, their thing is, you know, obviously the five positions on the floor, but they're going back to 96. So basically they're going back, you know, a quarter century for this. So they've got, you know, it's going to be all the usual suspects, I think, from any angle. Okay. So you know that Kentucky, Duke, Carolina, and Kansas are going to be in there. If you're going to go all time, now you're going to go UCLA.
Right.
And actually even UCLA, like the point guard, Kentucky, UCLA, Duke, Michigan State, North Carolina, UCLA, you got Westbrook, you got Lonzo Ball, you got Baron Davis in that time frame. So and obviously, if you're going to go, you know, if you're going to go all time, you know, obviously you've got two of the best college players ever, maybe one, two, and one of them, one of the greatest players ever, period, in Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yep.
And you, so, but I mean, in recent times, certainly, UCLA has fallen off for the most part. And most of these, you know, if you go through, I mean, it's Duke, Carolina. Who produces the best right now? You know, Duke for a long time, the big knock on Duke was, yeah, Duke, great players, but they don't do that much in the NBA. And, like, Leitner was a good, he was a fine NBA player. But, I mean, we're talking about he's one of the best, probably certainly three to five college players ever. They had a lot of guys who didn't really pan out. And that has start obviously has changed. I mean, they've had a lot more guys who have gone in and done well in the league. I mean, Kansas has Wilt Chamberlain, if we're going to go all-time stuff. You know, Kentucky lately probably produces the most. Obviously, you think about Anthony Davis, you think about John Wall and guys like that. It depends on how you want to look at it. Sports Illustrated had a thing about, like, overall how many you produce. And I believe Kentucky was number one by quite a bit in that one. So, but UCLA is right after him. Kevin Love's another guy from UCLA, you know, in recent years. Reggie Miller, if you want to go back to the 80s. You know, there's North Carolina obviously has Michael Jordan. We think of him, but you think about, I mean, they've had tons of guys.
Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Kenny Smith. Jerry Stackhouse.
Jerry Stackhouse. Yeah. Rasheed Wallace. You know, in recent years, they've had some disappointing guys in recent years themselves, like Tyler Hansbrough didn't really do a lot. You know, Ty Lawson, I thought was going to be a great NBA point guard, didn't really pan out. But Duke, you know, because of guys like, you know, Kyrie, I mean, that's the thing with Duke. They've gone to the one and done model.
Right.
So they have a lot of guys you almost forget now were at Duke. Like, oh yeah, Kyrie was at Duke.
That's but what's funny about Duke is, like, out of the new generation of Duke players to come out, we're not excluding Zion in this situation right now. Kyrie played probably the least amount of games out of all those players.
He played like 13 games,
and then yet he's probably the best product to come out of Duke. Yeah, now up until Zion.
See, I actually covered a Kyrie Irving Duke game before his career ended. He put 31
one
on
of the
Michigan,
few.
He put 31 on Michigan State. I was like, that guy might be all right. That guy's all right. And then he was done like 2 weeks later. Bagley, we'll see with him. Brand was a guy who kind of helped change the narrative on Duke, Elton Brand, because they had a long, you know, and Corey Maggette too. They were around the same team, one of the best college teams I've ever seen. Jay Williams was a guy who would have been great. And of course had the injury. I mean, you look at Kansas, Paul Pierce is another guy, you know, right now. Andrew Wiggins has been a little bit disappointing. They've had a ton of guys go in the league.
Joel Embiid.
Yep, Embiid, that's true. And he's an example of a guy doing well. But there's a lot of other programs too that, you know, have produced. I mean, you think about, you know, Louisville's had a lot of guys. Arizona's had a ton of guys. You know, Indiana, I mentioned Michigan State. Michigan's had some guys. And there's a lot of programs. I mean, St. John's is number 10 on the Sports Illustrated list of all time. You don't think of them.
No.
But they've had, you know, more going back, you know, like Chris Mullen and Walter Berry and those guys. But, you know, you've got some Ron Artest. Was an example of a guy who was great at St. John's who has done something. But that's one of those, I mean, the Big East programs going back, Georgetown, you know, they used to produce so many NBA players. Syracuse has still been pretty good, and, of course, they're in the ACC now, but I'm thinking like old Big East, you know, Villanova, I mean, UConn, actually. UConn's had some pretty good impact on the NBA. But, you know, it comes down to if you're really going to go best. I mean, you're basically – you're talking about those four blue bloods right now, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Carolina, and then you can include UCLA too. UCLA has still managed to produce NBA players even really in a long stretch of mediocrity.
They have, and, you know, the Duke part of the one guy that I thought at Duke was going to be really good, and then just injuries got a hold of him. I mean, Jabari Parker, I thought he was going to be a really good NBA player, And the injuries just made it to a point where eventually, you know, he wasn't the same guy anymore, didn't have the burst. And I wonder what could have been for Jabari Parker if he stayed healthy.
That's a good example of a guy who, I agree, I was big on Jabari Parker. One guy who has had a really, excellent career, and especially when you think of longevity, is J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
I mean, he was kind of ahead of his time in terms of, in the NBA now, there's such a value on a guy like that, on a guy who can shoot with that efficiency and is a shooter, and you can figure out a way to keep him on the floor and hide him defensively if you need to, but that shooting is of such value. And obviously, I think there's a lot more premium. A guy like, think locally, like Aaron Nesmith, I think he's going to go in a prominent spot in this draft because there's such a premium right now on shooting, for example. But that's one Duke guy who I would say, again, kind of helped change the whole narrative that Duke, doesn't produce good pros. I mean, there's, Duke's had some guys. The 2015, Duke team, like a guy like Justice Winslow, I thought he might come right in the league and just be dynamite. I thought Jahlil Okafor would be better than he has been. I mean,
yeah.
He's fine, it's hard sometimes. It's fit and it's where you go, and it's never a science.
Joe, you mentioned Ron Artest earlier. Is he gone back to Ron Artest? Is he Meta World Peace still? Like, where do we stand in that?
That's a good question. I don't know. But if we're talking St. John's, though.
Oh, he was Ron Artest.
Yeah,
then.
Then he's Ron Artest. I assume he's probably, he's still Meta World Peace.
Well, he almost changed his name to, like, Panda Fun at one point. When he was playing in China, he changed his name to, like, Panda Fun.
Panda Fun?
Yeah, Panda Fun. I don't think he actually went through to change his name, but it was talks of him changing his name to Panda Fun, which is an awesome name.
His press conference after the Lakers won the championship, I think in 2010, was still to this day one of the more entertaining things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes,
it was hilarious.
That brought a smile to my face because Ron Artest basically helped Kobe Bryant win his fifth championship because Kobe struggled in that game. He was bad in that game. But Ron Artest saved the day, so he was happy. He had his whole family up there. It was amazing, man. And when you watch that, it's like you're just so happy for a guy like that because it's like how can
acknowledge
you hate,
me, please?
Yeah, how can you hate this guy, man?
And by the way, so he was actually I forgot this. He was actually still Ron Artest then. So apparently he changed his name September of 2011. So at that point he was still Ron. Yeah, but now he's met. I mean, he's only 40. That's a crazy thing. Like you think of a guy like that, and you think he's way older than that, but probably still has a little bit of game. Meta World Peace.
Apparently the player development coach for the South Bay Lakers. So who knew of the G League there? Good for Meta World Peace.
Absolutely.
When we come back, we will update the bracket. Phil Bredesen's region, the voting took place yesterday. David Poyle's region will take place today. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino, and every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.